good shirt, dude.
Thanks, man.
That's right. This is Pre-Game Engineer Tailgate Racing Podcast, episode number 124. It's Thursday, December 7th, 2017. I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace, joined in the PTN Podcast Studio with Pre-Game Engineer Andrew Sherwood. What's up, dude?
I think I've been excited for the anticipation that I could possibly be.
And I've been behaving that way.
Probably been annoying.
Possibly. As always, y'all, before we get to it, this podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. Go to patreon.com/PTM. Join the What's Drink Club for as little as $1 a month. Get that free koozie, y'all. Best part is, every cent in 2017, we're donating to sponsored drivers. Join the PTM Posse today. Be a part of the sports you love. This week's show is brought to you by our official sponsors at the $5 and a per month level. That's Catherine Keith, Sebastian Stang, Laura Henshaw, Harry Balzonga, Mick Rose, Chad Sterling, Aaron Bearden, Robert Keplinger, Tony Saul, Colby McClam, Eric Kevin Ryan, Keeper, Maryland Best, Patrick Cleary, and Jeff Brown. And we'd like to, Sherwin, we'd like to welcome on our show today one of our patrons himself, which is,
that's right.
It's very odd to say, but our returning guests, you know what we say about returning guests, Sherwin? We did not piss them off.
Oh, yeah. Those are the ones we, I think, officially call, like, alumni.
Yeah, yeah. You're an alumni now, Mr. Jeff Gluck of JeffGluck.com. I have to say it, dude. That I have as much fun saying it as I hope you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's fun about it is that, like, I guess you guys are sort of my bosses, or some of my bosses on Patreon, and I'm your bosses on Patreon.
Right.
So I'm glad to see that you guys are working hard. This is just like an employee visit. Now I get to be your boss checking on you to see how you guys are doing.
Uh-oh. Well, we're drinking on the job, buddy.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. Sorry to
maybe some boozing on the job.
That'll happen. Before we get started, Mr. Gluck, what'd you bring for us today? What you drinking?
So in true Portland style, I have a last sip of my latte that I just got. I was dragging a little bit this afternoon, and Sarah and I went across the street, and I got a Muscovado soy latte. This is true Portland. I know you guys were hoping that I would come with some sort of craft brew or something like that.
No, dude, but, keep Portland weird. What the hell is a Muscovado? Is that a thing?
I don't know, but Sarah's been big on that flavor. They don't have like normal flavors there, of course, because it's Portland. Everything's weird. So this is what I got, and this is keeping me. I have a self-imposed writing deadline later tonight for a feature story that I'm working on. So after this, I'm going to get dinner, and then hopefully I might even have to have more coffee. I don't know, but at least I'm jacked up for the show, so that's a good thing, right?
Well, as probably like your 1/40,000th boss here, this very low percentage will forgive you for a slight delay on the deadline there, if you will. Sherwin, what you got today?
So in keeping with our sort of trying to have a theme to what we're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I know Gluck has a relationship with Colorado because his parents live there now. He's tweeted multiple times about being a Broncos fan. So what I've got here is the Breckenridge Brewery Mango Mosaic, which is like a kind of a tropical IPA.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. I've been into those lately. Man, I just went America today. I got my Ryan Truex, thank you, sir, for the shirt.
Oh, that's a great shirt.
I've got the Eldora hat. I've got a Miller Lite in the can. And on deck is that Jim Beam, like just America.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I guess I didn't list it all. And then later we're going to get into this stolen whiskey that I discovered.
Stolen whiskey.
You know, I'm a sucker for branding.
Yeah.
And marketing, packaging. Good. So that'll be fun. Somebody's like scratched something out and then
wrote stolen.
We stole this.
It's XXX on it. Well, Mr. Gluck, how you been? How you doing? How's the off-season treating you so far?
Really good. I've been great. I mean, this is wrapping up the best year of my life. I hate to kind of say that because, there's still time left. So I don't want to be like jinxing it and be like, this has been the best year of my life, and then there's like still 3 weeks left, and I'm like, oh geez, so I'm saying at least so far. But this has been a crazy year, and it's just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of, my head's still spinning a little bit, but we are now. I'm still trying to work hard, because you know I feel more pressure in this off season maybe than I've ever felt, just because it's like people are still paying. So I mean nobody said on Patreon or something, right, like, well, we demand content every day, but I'm like, well, people are still paying. It's not like they're expecting me to just be there, go, okay, thanks for the money for 2 months and not do anything. So
yeah.
I did a podcast with Brant James yesterday. I wrote something on Monday and Tuesday. I got this feature story I'm working on. Stuff like that, you know. I'm trying to stay busy, I guess.
I hear you. It is episode number 124. We've been talking about the car number that associates with that episode number, and once we rolled over to the hundreds, we didn't start till like episode 48 or so, so we still got something to talk about. And holy crap, car number 24 is today, so you're on for car number 24. You can't talk about driver 24 without Gordon, obviously, and by that I mean Cecil Gordon. Of course, 373 races in the 24. He didn't have any wins over 17 years between the 60s and 80s. Sure, obviously, that's who we got to talk about. Quick shout out.
Clearly, that's the most important driver of the 24.
The most important Gordon of the 24 car. Shout out to Brock Beard, last car on Brock. 112,908 laps over 449 career races. He led 23 of those 112,000 laps. Most of his career, he was a driver owner. He did some crew work for Childress and Travis Carter. Passed away in 2006. We'll go hats off and drinks up. Yes, sir, for Mr. Cecil Gordon. Coincidentally, he's not related to that other Gordon character at all. But to give you a quick full circle on the 24, I thought this was heartfelt and fun for me. Jeff, when you had Sherwin on your podcast, it was at Darlington. I found out as we were packing up the truck to go to Darlington that my grandmother passed away, and I had to like unpack everything and go take care of all that. My grandmother was a huge Jeff Gordon fan. Like, she followed NASCAR, big Jeff Gordon fan, always talked about what Gordon was doing that week. She would listen to the podcast, Sherwin, and anytime we're mentioning Gordon, I mean, she's texting me on the, she had her iPad thing.
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, I don't think I really talked about that. But so here we are, car number 24, and we got Gluck back on. I think the stat that you know, the way that we've been talking about the car numbers, we talk about number of wins and stuff, the car number 24 has the fourth most wins of any car number ever. And they're all from one guy.
So. See, and that's why you know that, like, it's not Hall of Fame that you're talking about.
Yeah.
With that guy. It's some higher level of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, what kind of like superlatives can we throw at it without repeating ourselves all the time?
Hall of Legends.
Hall of Legends. I like that.
Okay, that works.
I like that. Who else is in the Hall of Legends?
Well, you can't go too far down the line, or else it waters down your legends pretty quick, right? I mean, it gets to be like watered down beer. The quality is just not as strong. So you would almost have to say, if you're going to call the Hall of Legends, you almost have to cap it. And then if you put somebody else in, you have to boot somebody else out and say, sorry, you're not quite legend status anymore.
Okay.
This has to be like harsh. It's like no feelings in the Hall of Legends. Like, sorry, hey, you were good enough at one time to make the Hall of Legends, but you're not. You got to go.
It's not Mount Rushmore. Like, it's not permanent.
That's right. You got to make room. You got to make room. If it's a Hall of Legends, there's 100 legends. It's not legendary enough.
I like it.
100%.
Ooh, yeah, right.
Early on,
starting off early.
Here we go.
Yeah, with that, that's the drinking word here. It's like Pee-wee's Playhouse, but instead of screaming, we got a drink to it on the 100% rule there. Yeah, that's great. Maybe that'll be our Jeff. That'll be in our next episode together. If he doesn't get so pissed off that he doesn't want to be on after this one, but. it'll be the Hall of Legends, maybe top 12. 12 sounds like a good number there. And of course, Chase Elliott, 72 races so far in the 24 with no wins. How long into 2018, Jeff, until Chase gets that win?
All I can say is that it better be before the next driver of the 24 gets a win, William Byron, because tell you what, if William Byron goes out and wins his first race in the 24 before Chase Elliott wins his first race in the 9 or at all, it's going to be like kind of like this hot under the collar moment where the pressure increases on Elliott even more, because it's sort of like, okay, this guy is supposed to be the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't win early next season, it's just going to be more and more like, can he ever win? It's going to start dogging him bad, you know? Like, it's the kind of thing where it's going to be a story all the time.
Right, right. And, I mean, that's a lot of it. He has heaped on enough pressure on himself, as everyone, you know, that seems to be a lot of the story, too, is the amount of pressure he's heaped on himself. I can't imagine that just sort of self-perpetuating and continuing to grow. We'll see. Sherwin, you wrote down a couple notes. The first one you wrote down, the word integrity was one of them, and you wanted to talk about that with Mr. Gluck. Tell us what that is.
Oh, yeah. So as a part of this show, Jeff, a lot of people had asked me that, you know, to talk about, and this is not a segue, just it's going to happen later in the show, about things that everybody knows is happening, but you know, hasn't been officially announced yet, or maybe an outlet that you're like kind of squinty eyed at has made an announcement. But I've always tried to coach our followers on Twitter when it comes to news that if it hasn't come from Jeff Gluck, Bob Pockers, or Nate Ryan, then it isn't real yet, and you need to wait until those guys talk about it.
Well, that's tough. I mean, you know, there's certain situations where you can't, like, okay, let's say my first thought was like the Tony Stewart, Kevin Ward stuff all those years ago, or a few years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, like, that was rough.
People were tweeting me for hours saying, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Where's your story on this? How come you're not tweeting about this? People were saying, oh, he must be asleep. You know, all the stuff. I was very aware of it from, you know, like probably 20 minutes after it happened. But until I'm sure, or I really have the facts, or I really feel like I have sources and have confirmed information, I just can't. I really don't want to put anything out there if people aren't, you know, if I can't take the risk of being wrong. So I'm ultra cautious on that kind of stuff. It doesn't mean that if somebody else reports it, it's, you know, it's not news. They may have confirmed it first or something. I'm going to be usually one of the last people on something if it's breaking like that, because I just don't, it's not worth it to me to risk my reputation or even put something out when, like, let's say the family's not ready to talk about it yet. You know, you see sometimes on Twitter, like, people are like rushing to announce somebody's death, where like the family hasn't even confirmed it yet or something like that. Like, that's just why do that? What's the point? Just to make yourself look like you are on it or something. So I'm typically cautious in those situations, I guess.
Well, I don't know how things are monetized when it comes to the internet world, in terms of like maybe people want to go to your site, and that means that a company that wants to advertise with you is going to give you a certain amount of money based on a level of hits that you get to. But on Twitter, I can't imagine. So we know that Twitter, at least at the surface level, doesn't track views or reads. It only tracks likes and retweets and quote tweets, potentially.
Yeah, impressions or whatever,
yeah. It tracks impressions. I guess maybe that's the way it tracks reads. Yeah. Like, if someone actually clicks on the individual link itself as opposed to just reads in their feed. But I tend to lean on your side of the fence, especially after having made a couple of mistakes of retweeting people that were a little bit advanced on information that maybe wasn't ready to be shared yet. Or maybe even turned out to be false. It's like, I think, like, why would, so far be it for me, a fan NASCAR podcast co-host, to try to give the news, especially if it's like breaking in the moment news. So we just don't do that over here.
Well, I mean, that's not the space that we occupy, if you will.
No.
We're here for
this is entertainment.
Analysis and goofing off. Jeff, maybe we'll do kind of a roller coaster here.
Okay.
You know, there's a serious topic there. How about a fun topic? Tell us the evolution. It feels like there's been an evolution of the Jeff Gluck from jeffgluck.com. I feel like the first time was kind of testing the waters, and now it feels like a, hey, this is me, y'all know me. And what's the reaction been? What's the evolution of that been like?
No, it's still, I'm still not at the, hey, this is me. Hey, I'm Jeff Gluck from jeffgluck.com. I'm not at that level yet.
Even you don't close your eyes now, when you say it. That, you can't close your eyes when you say it. You know, that becomes that's a whole different thing.
I'm not. I'm barely holding it together a lot of times when I say it, because I can see that the drivers up there, I start to go, Jeff Gluck from jeffgluck.com. You know, and you can see some of them, like, they'll snicker, or some of them just don't give you much of a reaction anymore. But especially at first, it was really kind of embarrassing. I mean, I had this interaction with Lewis Hamilton that I really wish I had gotten the video. I asked I asked Haas F1 team to help me get the video from Formula One, but apparently they only put it out to, like, their rights holders or something. So it's maybe someday, you know, I'll be able to go in the archives and get it. But it was after qualifying it in Austin, and so what's crazy about F1 is they have a moderator, and he stands right next to the drivers. And if you've ever watched one of these F1 press conferences, you'd never know. But the guy is right there. He's this French guy, and he has his shirt, like, you know, half unbuttoned with his chest hair showing and all the stuff. And he's like, he has this little notepad, and he's, you know, so you raise your hand. And he's like, questions. Who has questions? You know, and so you know, he so I raised my hand, like, in this qualifying press conference, because I wanted to ask a question, and he kind of looks at me and he's like, no. So I'm like, you know, he's, maybe he'll come back to me, I don't know. So, like, he's like very, he's judging hard on, like, the people asking questions. Like, there's this Italian dude and he has this long-winded question, and the French guy interrupts and he goes, no, way too long, you cut the question, So I'm like, oh, crap. So, like, I'm super nervous about asking my question. So, like, I raise my hand, and he finally calls me. He's like, gentleman dear, in the blue shirt. So, like, you know, so I get the microphone, and I'm like, Lewis, Jeff Gluck from jeffgluck.com. And, you know, I was, like, super nervous, and I start asking my question, and Lewis is like, hold on there, mate. Hold on. What did you say that the name of your website was? And I'm like, jeffgluck.com. He's like, that's your site. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And, like, all the like, the foreign reporters, like, start laughing in the press conference and stuff. And Lewis is like, oh, okay, Jeff Gluck. Okay. Like, he was just messing with me or whatever. But it was fun. I got my question out, and he gave me a good answer. But I was just like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. So I'm just still not comfortable, even in NASCAR press conferences, with saying the Jeff Gluck from jeffgluck.com thing, because I just think it sounds dumb. I mean, I wish I'd come up with a better name, honestly, but all the name that I think of, I, like, go to GoDaddy or whatever, and people, they've already taken it. So I may just be stuck with jeffgluck.com for now.
You know, there are, and this is not a knock on other folks, there are a lot of friends of ours in the podcast world who have really cool names, and I think it's because maybe we didn't have the creativity to come up with, like, a cool name, like our friends at Lap Traffic. And every time they talk about Lap Traffic on a NASCAR race, you know, those guys are, hey, they're talking about us, and you know, right front tire, and right front tire went down, hey, he got his name on there. Nobody's ever going to say PETM on a NASCAR broadcast, but on the other hand, everybody knows what PETM is.
Well, and that personal branding too. So there's two, yeah. There's two sides to every, like, you can be really quipsy and create this really cool phrase or whatever you want to describe yourself as, a nickname or whatever you want to call it, or you can just be you. And both of those things do actually work.
Yeah. So I guess from one uncreative name to another. Totally respect what you're doing.
Well, it would just be nice, like, you know, like, I had Monty Dutton write a couple times this year, and Aaron Bearden.
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm going to have other people write eventually, you know, to bring on more contributors or something. I don't know where this is all going, but I can't really see, you know, it'd be better if it wasn't like jeffgluck.com, because Monty Dutton, and actually in a press conference this year after Truex won Charlotte, he said Monty Dutton from jeffgluck.com, and Truex was like, "No way, seriously? That's freaking awesome, man," or something like that.
See, so, that's the reaction you're not going to get from any other website or any other name, man. That's what's so cool to me. I love that. Yeah. And you have Dale Jr.'s blessing, dude. I mean, come on.
That's, yeah. Well, I guess for now it's working. Like Laura Sue Henshaw says, too late to change now.
Yeah. So, yeah. I love it. Yeah. I love it. You know, here's
Laura Henshaw, by the way, is a big supporter of ours, too. She's been very supportive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, she's not feeling very well, so I hope she feels better, or at least is laughing at this, because laughter is the best medicine.
That's true.
I'm going to raise a glass. She is active in our live chat feed on the YouTube. So,
all right.
She's hearing everything you're saying and what we're saying live.
All right, Laura. Feel good. So, Jeff, here's something I thought was an interesting question. I'm gonna kind of change it around a little bit. We do this podcast as a total hobby. It is a money sink, and our only opportunity to like get money through Patreon.
Yeah, it's a cost center.
Yeah, yeah. We're just going to dump all that money because I didn't want to have to deal with taxes and stuff. We're just going to go like give it away to somebody, some driver somewhere at the end of the year. For us, it's not an obligation thing. It's not a I have to do this thing, and you hear about a lot of people, if you take your hobby and you make it a job, then now it's no longer a hobby. And I hear that in a lot of different professions that you might think is really fun or cool to do. I hear it from pilots, sure, when I hear it from media people. Does it still have that magic for you to do the podcast and still be fun and all that, versus the, I don't know, overhead stuff that you have to go through?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question, because I guess I'm coming from it from a slightly different angle, because for me, I never was doing anything with racing when it wasn't a job, because mm-hmm. like my first race was the first race I ever even watched was one that was assigned for me to go to. So for my job, for my newspaper job. So I've never come at it from like, hey, this is just something I'm doing for fun. So it's almost reverse, where it was so much of a job before, where you had a boss saying, we need this, we need this, we need this, you can't do this, you can't say this, to now I've gone and I'm having way more fun with it because it's just me. So I feel like I'm definitely working harder than I ever have. Like I've worked harder this year for sure than, I mean, I did at USA Today, just because at USA Today,
that's so cool.
You get your assignments. And yep. you say, okay, what is expected of me? And you do that, you fulfill your assignments, and then you're done. So unless your boss says, hey, I want something else, or some news pops up, then, you know, you're on it. But like, this feels sort of like it's sort of never ending, especially the biggest part that's changed for me is like the interaction with people. And mm-hmm. and I still need to get better at that. But like the amount of like emails, DMs, Patreon messages, messages in the Facebook group, texts, whatever, just tweets in general. I feel like I'm never sort of keeping up with that. I'm always behind. I'm always trying to like catch up on thank you notes to new patrons, or contact people and answer questions, or pop into the Facebook group and say, hey, this is what's going on. Oh, thanks for that awesome comment. Like you left 2 days ago and I didn't see it till now. I'm so sorry. So like that kind of stuff has become a bigger part of the job. And I'm putting job in air quotes big time here, cause it doesn't really, that's not really a job, you know, a job, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. So I don't really have as much downtime now, where like, if I feel guilty every time I am sitting there not doing anything. Like I don't play video games anymore, cause I'm just like, and I need to be taking this time and doing something related to the site or building this or adding this. But all that said, I'm having so much more fun than I ever have, and I'm enjoying it so much more that it doesn't feel like I'm working harder. It doesn't feel like it's a job, because I'm having a blast doing it. So like I'm enjoying it. I have energy. This was the first season in years where I got to end of the season at Homestead, and I'm like, damn, I'm so bummed that's over. I wish it wasn't the off season. because like normally I get there and I'm just like, oh, the grind. I'm just so tired. I can't wait. I just need to rest up. I just need to get away. And now I went into it this year and I'm like, man, that was fun. I wish that wasn't over. Like I really liked it. So anyway,
man,
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's too cool. And like you said, I mean, well, shoot, now I gotta keep the pace up for the patrons and everything too, during the off season as well. So,
well, do you anticipate that your excitement for doing what the job is would ever get overwhelmed? I mean, obviously you can't speak to things that you haven't seen yet, but obviously this year's could have been as overwhelming as any year yet for you as a NASCAR beat writer / reporter / journalist / podcaster, however you want to describe your role. Do you anticipate you might hit a wall? Because it feels like you have more enthusiasm than you've ever had, and you were a guy that started with so much enthusiasm, like people wanted to pay your salary.
Yeah. It's weird. I think if it got stagnant, then, you know, it was just sort of like routine and normal. Because I don't care what you do, I feel like any job gets routine and boring after a while. If let's say you were an actor, you know, going to the Oscars, and you know, the first time you went to the Oscars, you'd be like, "Oh my God, this is unbelievable! I cannot believe I'm at the Oscars! Like, are you kidding me?" You know. Then the second time you'd go, you'd be like, "Oh, this is really cool." But like, if you're like Jack Nicholson and you're going for like the 25th time, you're like, I got to get dressed up again, go to this, put on my fake smile for the cameras. You know what I mean? Like, it has to get old at some point, even the coolest thing in the world. So I think if this stayed at a level where it was like, you know, people were excited at first, now they're just like, ho-hum, whatever, then that might be the case. But the thing is about this so far, at least, it's like every day people are like so enthusiastic. So, and they're saying such nice things and being like, you know, oh, this is the best $5 I spend a month. And I'm like, are you serious? That's so awesome. Wow. That's like so nice. And it makes me like more energized and more motivated to like keep going even harder and better. Cause you like want to keep giving those people more and justifying it. And you know, cause you don't want them to be like, you know what? This guy, I feel like he's kind of cruising now. He's kind of on cruise control. Like it was fun for a little while. It was like this cool little novel idea, but you know, that's probably it. I don't want them to feel that way. And I definitely don't feel that way myself. So it's just all the nice things that people have done this year and just like the incredible kindness that people have shown, like it keeps it from being at all, even the slightest bit boring or routine or anything. Cause it's just like, this is crazy. Like, this is completely surreal, odd, strange experience. Like, why are people so nice? You know,
man, I think it has to do with this particular community. On a much lesser, obviously monetary scale, but, we started our Patreon account, a year ago, right? It was December last year. And we said from the very beginning we're going to donate the money or whatever, but the whole thing is it's a sponsored by thing, and we're going to give out stickers and koozies and all that stuff. And I have not been able from like the third week in January through now, I have not been able to say the $5 and up per month sponsors, which I said I would always say at the beginning of the show, and so I have to do it now. I did not realize that I would not be able to say all of them in one breath, ever. And so it's that I think
and
part
it's
of
something
this,
of a running joke with our audience too.
Oh yeah, because I mess it up. I reread it every time. You know, to start off the show. It's not a pre-record. Only thing pre-recorded is Sydney Lett's "We Are NASCAR" song.
That's the only thing we pre-record.
But over the top of that is me trying to read these things and being fun. But yeah, it's. I think it's part of this community and part of this whole thing that is unique among the other sports around here. You know, speaking of some podcasts, Jeff, what other podcasts do you listen to? Are there fun ones out there that you're listening to on a weekly basis?
So the number one podcast that is my favorite thing sort of, and it's sort of what I modeled my entire thing after.
Is the PETM podcast. Yep. Thank you, sir. All right. Well done. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Jeff Gluck. All right. No, it's cool. I had to. Sorry.
It's fine. It's this podcast. Rob has a podcast. It's Survivor and reality TV podcast. So what was really cool about this was I would listen to his podcast. He breaks down Survivor episodes.
Okay.
He breaks down each one called the Survivor Know-It-Alls. And then after somebody gets voted off each week, he has the person that just got voted off come on his podcast. And it's like sort of his community is like the knowledgeable Survivor fans. And a lot of people that end up going on Survivor are like the people that have studied his strategy talk and listened to his podcast. So it's really, really cool and fun to listen to him. So he would talk about being a patron. He'd say, hey, if you want to become a patron of the podcast. So I had started giving him $5 a month because I was just like, wow, I listened to like his podcast at least twice a week. So, I'll chip in $5 a month and keep it going or whatever. So that was really sort of the inspiration for this podcast or for my website, for doing Patreon and everything. I thought, well, if he could do that, maybe I could do that for NASCAR, because he was basically Survivor journalism in some cases. And so I had reached out to him. I sent him an email. And, I think this is early last January. And I was like, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing. This is what I'm getting ready to do. Yep. And, if you have any tips on Patreon or anything like that, I'd love to hear him. And I wasn't really expecting to hear back. But he not only emailed me back, he said, hey, I'd love to get on the phone with you and talk to you about this. So I was like, oh, really? I mean, he doesn't know who I am at all.
Right.
So this guy, who like I'm a huge fan of, he got on the phone and talked to me about Patreon for like 35 minutes and talked me through the whole thing. And it was like having my own private podcast or something, because I'm like, oh my God, he's talking to me. And it was so cool. Like, I just thought that was such a nice thing. And so he really got me, like gave me confidence to do it. And he's like, initially I was just going to do the website, and he's like, you really should start a podcast too, because that's really, that's really, really growing. And I'm like, all right. He's like, no, seriously, you need to do that. So, that was why I ended up doing my podcast. So that's the first one that comes to mind when you say that. But, taking your podcast out of the running for the best NASCAR podcast. My favorite NASCAR podcast this year was probably the Door Bumper Clear podcast. Oh, I really like the insight that those guys gave. And yeah, it's really not politically correct a lot of times, probably offensive to some people. But I've told TJ and Brett this both, but I mean, they tend to give a lot of information that I don't even know if they realize how much insight they're giving. Like, yeah. They'll say, oh, yeah, and when this new rule is coming next year for Xfinity, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, wait a minute, that has that been announced? What? Or like, they didn't tell us on the roof that was a rule for the restart. And you're like, ooh, interesting insight, And also to hear what they think of other drivers in a very honest way. So that's probably the NASCAR one where I just feel like I can't miss this because – like they're saying stuff that I really need to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have pointed every one of our listeners towards Door Bumper Clear as often as I possibly can, because I feel the exact same way. I think they provide insight, humor, and a level of decorum that you would not be able to find at the journalist or the fan layers.
Yeah, yeah. And they're unique in that Venn diagram, if you will, of those three being insiders, but also being entertainers and entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, we had Spotter Brett on the show, and a little birdie Sherwin told me that he might make a second appearance at some point.
He's definitely going to make a second appearance at some point, and he definitely called me a dumbass yesterday on Waze because he has a voiceover and it's fantastic.
I just downloaded that, and I'm so excited to. I'm going to go get lost. I think it was Rika Porter, who I see in the comments here, who said that she got lost and she got called a dumbass on Waze by Spotter Brett. So the one thing I'm disappointed to hear is that Spotter Brett on Waze apparently doesn't have a thing where he goes, what an idiot.
Oh, how did he? Maybe he's like trying to copyright that for yeah. some other business appropriation.
It's going
to
be a t-shirt or
something. What a, yeah, what an yeah. idiot. Yeah,
I would buy that t-shirt. I would buy a t-shirt for sure that says, like, oh. what an idiot, and just a spotter barrette that, on, you know, his Twitter name.
Oh man, I was interrupting you during that whole time, but you're right. If he doesn't have an online store with either just what an idiot or hashtag what an idiot mm-hmm. on any kind of article of clothing you might want to buy, that needs to be something they should do.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm you know somebody should tweet it at him. Somebody more important than me, or maybe we'll just ask him on the show. I think we usually like to. So last year he was like. Asked me, you know, going into Daytona. And so we had him on the pre-Daytona preview show or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It was a blast. You know, Jeff, we've been talking about Patreon and really this whole business model and stuff and, you know, very recent news with the Patreon fee structure changing and all that. Curious about your reaction to that. You know, both of us being on Patreon, again, you for a living, us for a kind of hobby here.
Trying to promote the community.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the wider audience that you appeal to means a wider potential pool of bosses. How does that influence, you know, your behavior and what you, I guess just your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, you know, I was disappointed for sure. Basically, what they did, for those who haven't heard about this, is so, like, basically... Right now, if you pledge to PETM Podcast or you pledge to me, whatever. So I was getting probably about 90%, I think, of the money that's pledged. Patreon takes 5% because it's, you know, it's like the same as if you go to GoFundMe or Kickstarter or something like that, they're taking fees because they're the platform for it. So that's understandable. But then there's like credit card processing fees that would range from like 5 to 7% or whatever. Well, Patreon now is... In an attempt to give more money to the creators to get it up to 95%, they're charging the patrons for those credit card fees. They're still taking their 5%, but then they're going to charge 35 cents plus like 2.9%.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with that is there's a lot of the creators out there who are really dependent on the smaller level donations, like people that are $1 a month, $2 a month.
Yeah.
So... Now those people are going to be getting charged like $140 a month if you're $1. So that's a big deal, because if you are like somebody that can only afford $1 a month to sign up to support a creator on Patreon, and then they're like, well, now it's going to be $140 a month, and you know, I like personally, I would rather take that cost myself, even if I'm getting less money. I don't want my patrons to, they're already being so nice by doing this in the first place. I don't want them to have to pay more. And I'd rather just try to go get more patrons and make up for the money than have Patreon say, oh, congrats, you know, all those people that are being so nice to you, we're gonna charge them. At least give me the option to decline that. But I saw that Patreon is getting killed on Twitter, absolutely killed. And a lot of the creators are posting screenshots of their pledges getting deleted today. I don't know if you guys have lost any of your pledges, but I definitely have. Not a ton compared to, like, it seems like other creators, but I think seven people deleted their pledges today and then a couple more reduced. But the good thing is people are being so nice about it at the same time, where like I had a lot of patrons say, hey, you know, we're going to actually increase our pledges to try to make up for the people that are deleting.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was really, really cool, because that offset my thing. But I just think in general, you know, why, you know, the patrons are basically your customers. Don't make your customers pay an additional fee when they're already paying for a product, right? I mean, I don't know. It seems dumb.
Yeah, it's. I mean, so for me, I think you've probably seen this one too. You know, there's the exit surveys. I think you've talked about on your blog posts and stuff before. And we see the $1 and $2 a month folks who, you know, the exit survey will just say something like, you know, my financial situation changed. Meaning, you know, I just can't afford to, or, you know, this isn't in my discretionary budget anymore, if you will. And the fact that that comes from a $2 a month type of person means that if you're going to charge, you know, 20% more to that person, that happens sooner. And so I'm not sure that Patreon realizes how big a deal that sort of sponsorship level is, and that's a bummer. And especially again, for you, who's, you know, doing this for a living. And yeah, it's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to justify that. And it is good to see them getting, you know, pounded on Twitter, and maybe they will, I don't know. Like you said, give us the option. And I wonder how many people are actually going to, Patreon still feels like one of those pioneering sort of sites that a lot of the people who are on it are just wholesome and would be in the same sort of category that we all are, which is give me the option and I'll just say, yeah, I'll take the hit and, you know, let them, feel good about donating whatever they can. And then we'll deal with the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I wouldn't expect you to be a non-profit person, Jeff, because you have, you know, part of having a job is having a social life, and those things cost money, especially when you have a woman in your life, but or a partner, I should say. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a woman. It could, you know, however you do it. But I think one of the cool things about some of the charities and the way they've been able to organize, because they're such big organizations, is they do give the giver an option on how they want to manage the way the money's spent. For instance, I set up a Movember account in the name of PETM. We didn't do as well as I'd hoped, but we did raise some money, and that was great. But it allows you to pay the fee, mm-hmm. so that if you say, I want to check the $25 or the $100 or $50 or $3 box, you can also check the box and say, I'd like to pay the handling fee so that what actually goes to the charity is the dollar figure that, like, you know, the whole dollar figure that I checked that I wanted to give. That is something Patreon should probably look at, particularly because they move so much money. And on the flip side of this, what I'd like to say is I have participated in GoFundMe accounts. They're like at the 87% level,
mm-hmm.
to who actually gets the money. I contributed to the Super Troopers 2 GoFundMe. I think I contributed at the $35 level. But that's something Patreon should probably consider, and maybe that's some feedback. So if somebody like you, Jeff, you have almost 1,000 patrons, I would expect that they might reach out to somebody like you for an opinion. And at that time, you could provide them the feedback, hey, give me the option to reject and give the patrons the option to accept the extra fees.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. And when you were saying that, I was kind of thinking about, like, there's been some, I can't remember what the service is, but it's one of these like memorial type sites, or like when somebody's been, like has cancer or something really bad. And it's, you get an option, like you said, like, would you like to pay the processing fee on this or whatever, or help cover this fee? So it'd be nice if give the checkbox, the Patreon, on Patreon, and just say, okay, would you like to cover this creator's fee or whatever? But, Laura, I see Laura in the comments is saying they've made the decision and she's fine with it and we should move on.
Oh, perfect.
All right, we can move.
Thank
on.
You, Laura, for the feedback.
I'm in. Yeah, yeah. So let's move to the questions from the PETM posse here. We got a bunch of them, so might as well get started. Mick Rose,
Jeff, I hope you were have more than an hour of availability, because I think we totally got way more than an hour of content. We'll see. We'll play it by ear here.
Yeah, here we go. Mick Rose at GoDucks42_Mick. He asked, for the 2018 season, should NASCAR stay away from applying the sticky stuff on the track or still experiment with it? Mick, I love the boogers.
Grip boogers.
Yep, I love the boogers. Jeff, where you at?
I think they should keep trying to see what they can do with it. You know, especially at a place like Bristol, that kind of made it a good race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just they don't always apply it in the right way, though. I mean, that whole New Hampshire thing where they told the drivers, we know what's best or whatever, and then they finally listened. Wasn't it Texas or somewhere where they – and this is going off the sticky stuff, but the tire dragon, they dragged the bottom.
Oh, yeah. They dragged the track. Preferred line. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they're already going to be down there. Drag the upper groove and get them to go there. I don't know why they would do that, but I think you know, keep going with it. See what you can do. Don't just give up.
I'm with you on the boogers, and I want the official policy for NASCAR to be is ask Junior where to put the tire dragon.
There you go.
I seem to remember it was like the Bristol Truck Race, I think, was a great race, or it was enhanced with the boogers, the VHT, whatever, you know, deal. And then it was like, I don't think they reapply. It was like the very first one, and they didn't reapply. And so by the time Cup Race came around, blah, blah, blah. But I remember there being a great truck race with that, and especially toward the end with people having both lines. And it was so weird. It was the, like, well, we have the track. We have too many lines right now. We got to grind it down and not get the lines. Now we got to put down the boogers so we get the other line back. What are you doing? Figure something out.
I was like, listen to somebody that does drugs go, well, you take the coke to you do the coke to put the edges back on. You do the tank the pot to get the edges back off. You round the corners off. No, I'm kidding. I mean, that's a real conversation I've heard, but
that's a great comment.
Bristol, the middle groove and the high groove are the preferred grooves for all three series until you put the boogers down in the bottom lane, and then all of a sudden you got three.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. That truck race was fantastic. So we'll see how it goes going forward. But I think I agree. I think we're all three in agreement that testing this kind of thing out is probably a good idea.
Yeah, it's fun. Laura, fromage is good. I got it this time. Mm-hmm. Not from age, but fromage is good. Jeff, how do you feel about being an inspiration to upcoming writers in the NASCAR media world for being the first successful, fully Patreon-funded reporter? And what advice do you have for those following in your footsteps? The pioneer.
Wow. That's tough, man.
That's Laura, got a lot of responsibility around that question, doesn't it?
I don't know. Am I that much, or, you know, would people want to follow that model? I don't know that that's, I mean, I will say that it's kind of, the traditional route is getting harder and harder to do and to pull off. I used to tell, you know, I get these emails all the time and they're like, hey, you know, I'm a student in school or I'm thinking about getting into writing. Like, what can I do? And, you know, I used to always tell people, well, just make sure you go the traditional route. I mean, there's still a lot to be said for coming up through the local newspaper ranks, learning how to do that, you know, getting your base skills before you try to just leap into NASCAR writing. But, you know, these days there's fewer and fewer NASCAR jobs. I mean, you know, you talked to Brandt last week, you know, USA Today cut him. Just yesterday, NASCAR.com cut Kenny Bruce, and apparently Holly Kane's not going to be writing there either anymore. So earlier this year, the Charlotte Observer cut their NASCAR writer. Now they have a guy who does it, you know, a few races a year, but he's not full time anymore. So that's four huge NASCAR beat writing jobs that have gone just this year. And you could go back and, you know, the last few years and see these jobs disappearing. So maybe the route that is like this may have to be the route, unless you're with it directly through like an NBC Sports, which is broadcasting the races. But even Fox Sports, this year, well, here's another one. I mean, Tom Jensen this year got cut because when Fox Sports tried to go to their the pivot to video thing, got rid of all their writers. So even if you're with a NASCAR partner, you may not be safe. So that's really bad news for people that want to get into NASCAR journalism. It could be that the way you have to come up is to build a following, you know, just start blogging or, you know, covering it your own way, doing columns. One thing that I would really encourage people to do, two things. First of all, I really think that I see this a lot from younger writers. They're still trying to cover the races in a very traditional way. Like they're trying to say, this is what happened in the race. This is then this guy won. Or during the week, this is the news that happened. Mm-hmm. Breaking news, this crew chief got replaced. But I feel like if you're a younger writer trying to make a name for yourself, don't do that. I mean, everybody's already doing that. So that's why I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I pretty much try to come in with the analysis like almost immediately. Yes. Like I do like the, you know, what happened, what it means, is this important, and questions going forward. Like I think people are really looking for analysis as much as news now. So you've got to try to stand out. And if the news is already out there, don't waste your time. You know, come in with something different. Come in with an opinion. Like if I was going to tell a young writer today, you know, how should you cover NASCAR? Do opinion based stuff. you know, the news, Jenna Fryer's got the news. Bob Pockrass got the news.
Yep.
Let them, you know, you're not going to trump them with your Twitter feed on what's going on. So come with something different. And the second, so that's the second thing along those lines, you've got to stand out. I mean, think about like, Last Car on Brock, who you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different thing that nobody else is doing. And he's got that little niche now. Or the Racing Underdogs talking about, you know, he's tweeting radio chatter about all these guys that everybody else is ignoring. So try to do something where nobody else is talking about. Like, why not make a site just devoted to how Chase Elliott's doing and do all Chase Elliott stuff, like 100% Chase Elliott stuff. Where are all the driver-specific sort of news sites? I see some driver-specific Twitter feeds, you know, like Kane updates or Larson updates, but how about a website or a blog that's just about that, and you make your niche off that? I mean, I don't know if there's enough fans to support one thing like that anymore, but just try to be different, try to be creative. That's the advice I would give.
Well, I think that's fantastic, and I think you're not wrong there. And I think there are enough fans in those different spaces that they would totally enjoy those different bubbles or buckets mm-hmm. of information regarding the, you know, those specific parts of a race. I think this is a perfect segue based on some of the things you gave in your response to our second edition of the Let's Talk Society segment of the PETM podcast, and that is, how out of control is, in quotes, your opinion is wrong? I stole that from the Orange Cone bubble on social media. And what I mean by that is, how in the world have we allowed ourselves to get to a place where fact and opinion are considered on the same plane of things, and how do you deal with it?
So let me try to answer this from a journalist standpoint, because I think this is sort of where it all started getting blurred. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, but I feel like at least for me it has been. So let's say, in whether it's sports or news or whatever, it used to be that the media of the world had enough support to have a news reporter and then a columnist. So like, let's say you had your, even for football, so you had your Dallas Cowboys beat writer, and their job was for the newspaper to write all facts, news stories, this happened, injuries, whatever. Now, and then you had a columnist who would come in and all they would write is opinions. Now, as the media industry has shrunk, whether it's politics or sports or whatever, those same people who report the news are being called upon to give their opinions on that same news. So that's getting into very, very tricky territory, because as consumers of the news, as readers, you're like, well, wait a minute, what is now, is this person giving me this from a factual basis, from a straight up fair basis, or is this you know, an analysis, in quotes, where they're sort of giving a news analysis, they're saying what it means, but it's still mostly factual, or is this opinion? Like, you know, and so for a while the news industry, what they were trying to do is give you little code words as readers. So what they would say, like, if you see the word column, that is supposed to be straight opinion. If you see the word analysis, that's supposed to be, I'm telling you what I think the news might mean without giving my actual opinion, which is really murky. And then news is supposed to be news. But that line has continued to get blurred and blurred and blurred. So, you know, in my position now, even at USA Today, before I started doing this, you know, they were saying, hey, we need you to do a story on this and then do an opinion piece on this, because the opinion stuff really drives the conversation. That's what gets a lot of traffic. And I think readers, especially as news outlets, whether it's an athlete or a politician or whatever, they break their own news. Now they say, I am doing this, I'm going to this team. So the instant reaction is, well, what does this mean? Is this a big deal? Is this a good move? Well, who does this put out? Whatever. So that analysis is becoming more and more important as social media puts out their own news. So it's a very, very blurred line right now, and I think it's only going to get worse. And because there's no policing it, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
the only police is the readers themselves, yep. and there's no journalism police to say, you can't do that.
Yep.
Interesting. Do you have a comment, Rusty? You want to?
No. So, well, here I'll say. guess this was part of the follow-up to that question. I don't know if this is PC to bring up with you, Jeff. Have you seen the retweet if you hate Gluck thing?
I tweeted that. I retweeted that.
I knew he had. So that's why.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I think the lead into that would, for me, was because in NASCAR, more, I think, so than any sport that we follow, that any noise is good noise. I think that was kind of what Dale Earnhardt taught everybody, that, hey, as long as they're making noise, that's good for you. You're probably selling T-shirts.
PR is good PR stuff. Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Gordon sold T-shirts that said Jeff Gordon sucks on him, and he made money off that.
Thanks. Wait. Can I get a Jeff Gluck sucks T-shirt?
That would be awesome.
And can I get a PETM sucks T-shirt? Ours is probably more hot off the press.
I guess we still have to have our exchange with the live traffic guys, but currently they are the shittiest podcast on the internet, and we are in second place.
Right. Okay.
Which is probably a better place to be.
Let me jump in for just a second, though. Because I agree with you to an extent that more noise would be good, but at the same time, like, that you don't want to go full Skip Bayless or full Stephen A. Smith. Mm. I mean, actually, if you do, that's probably the path to success in the world, because they get paid literally millions per year to express their horrible hot takes and opinions.
Scripted, by the way, scripted.
Wow. Yeah, and it's all just complete trolling you. It's to get you angry and say, I can't believe that idiot. Oh my God, he's so wrong. It's to get you fired up. It's good, I guess, if you're generating a conversation, but I don't want to go down the road where I'm just being like, I'm saying stuff that's not true to me. I say stuff that I hope people will agree with, because I would actually like to get along with people. I don't want to be the guy that's like, oh my God, can you believe what that guy said? That's another thing. I mean, if you are a journalist out there that's willing to go full troll, full like, and not care how controversial you are, you'll probably make it, because people won't be able to stop themselves from hate reading or hate consuming your content.
Hate consuming. I love that. Hate consuming. Yes.
They'll hate themselves for reading it, but they can't help themselves from saying, oh my God, what does he say about this? I would just rather to be able to look myself in the mirror. I don't really want to go down that road as a journalist, but I know what you're saying, though.
I'm going to start quote tweeting people # hate consuming
when they
say something really crappy.
Yeah.
Well, it's like my wife, Sarah. She watches The Bachelor, but she hate watches The Bachelor. She is angry at it the entire time. We'll be sitting there on the couch and she's just complaining about it and saying, this is so dumb. Oh my God. I'm like, why are you watching this? She's like, because I hate it.
I'm going to admit today, and I listen to a lot of music, and I try to stay current on stuff, and I hate listened to an entire new country album. I'm not going to name the artist or anything. I listened to
No.
I'm not going to do that.
Tell me after.
I'll tell you afterward. I mean,
tell it on the YouTube.
I'm not here to disrespect nobody, because they work hard to put this thing out. It's a real, and they put their hard work into it. But boy, this album sucked.
All right, y'all. As soon as we sign off,
tell us that.
As soon as we sign off on the audio recording, we'll let you know what Rusty was talking about.
We got a question from. All right, now
get any of the brand?
Oh, we'll get to him in just a moment.
We have a rundown.
Yeah, we got the rundown here, and he's been giving me crap on the YouTube comments here, and I got to say it right. Andrew Kantzian. I got it right this time.
First try. At
Kantzian. All right, here's your three choices. If you could go back to 2014 and tell your past self one of these three things, which would be the least believable? Martin Truex Jr. champion in 2017, Alex Bowman taking over for a retiring junior, or that 5 of the 16 Chase drivers from 2014 are no longer in the sport. Which one is the biggest?
Least believable.
Yeah, least believable.
Wow, sure, that's such a good question, Andrew.
I think I would have to go with Alex Bowman taking over for a retiring junior, because that's 2-1 right there. That's juniors retiring, which, I mean, given his health stuff and whatnot. But then Alex Bowman in 2014, who the hell is Alex Bowman?
Honestly, though, I don't know. I kind of have to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Because it would almost be believable that you could say, okay, Junior is getting toward the end of his career, and Alex Bowman was a young guy. Maybe he could have made it. He could have won a race and gotten, you know, a David Gilliland like push up to the top or something. I mean, I'm not saying I would have called it, but
right.
Surprise. You know, it was at least maybe possible if some things had fell in the right way. But the Truex thing at the time, I mean, that seemed really like a long shot. I mean, his first year at Furniture Row, I mean, that was just like, that was a step down from Michael Waltrip. Everybody's like, oh God, he's going to sell for Furniture Row. That's too bad. So, I mean, just the fact that he would be champion, that's crazy to me. I think I wouldn't have believed that one.
Sherwin?
That he would win 12 races in 2 years.
Well,
after winning two or three in the previous 10. Yeah, I think Martin Truex has got to be it. When you look at, you say, if you've got to deposit me back in 2014 and say, what's going on right now?
Yeah,
I would say Truex being a champion is pretty unbelievable. Bowman, definitely less unbelievable. Like the kid, clearly the only reason why he never got a full season chance in a Junior Motorsports Xfinity ride was because sponsorship was getting weird, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. He's not a name brand.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all thought he was a back marker, I think, as has been called, but because he raced for BK in that Dr. Pepper 23 car, and sometimes
number 23
in the 83 car. But he is not a back marker driver. He was driving a last place car.
Yeah. So let's. Great question, Andrew. Kansian, by the way.
Kansian.
Frank Vilat. And with this, Sherwin, I gotta go blow my nose. This is kind of embarrassing. So we're gonna ask Jeff, and then I'm gonna run out for a second, and then come back like nothing actually happened.
Oh, I do this all the time.
And then the people who are listening on audio are gonna know because I admitted to it, and I could have done this whole thing without doing that, but I've already done it. So now what?
We always disclose.
Frank Vilat asks. Sorry. What's the most hilarious response you've ever gotten from an interview question, and who did it originate from? Rusty out.
Oh man. Oh, that's really tough. I'm not going to be able to come up with like a on the spot answer like that. I have a really bad memory when it comes to this kind of stuff.
My memory is horrible, so I can identify.
The funniest, man, that is so tough. I feel really bad for Frank. That I can't like think of a good answer right now, like that just had me laughing. I'm trying to think of like the last time I was just like super laughing at a question. And now I feel bad because I'm having to stall long enough for the bathroom.
You remembered that Frank was the one that asked the question is impressive to me, just so you know.
Well, you know, I was trying to pay attention. I don't know. I'm sorry. I have to think about this one. I'll just try to tweet Frank or something if I can think of a really funny response. But
so this is one of my favorite things about the PETM podcast and the way we do things, especially since, you know, if we edited, we could probably close this gap and leave it out, but we're not gonna because we don't do that. And
what happened? I leave and then you better. And then
no.
10-second pause.
Yeah. Oh no. I wrecked the whole thing. But Jeff's gonna go back and do his homework and think about something cool, and he's gonna tweet at Frank. But we don't have a current response, which is fine because guess what?
Oh, we got some questions.
More.
All right, we've got some questions from your buddy Brent James.
Okay. he always makes me uncomfortable, so I'm excited for these.
Excellent. All right. Well, the first one's pretty easy. Well, comparatively, maybe this will be embarrassing, but comparatively easy. Have you reconsidered the ethical dilemma on the high five from Dale Jr.?
Oh God.
Perfect.
So you might have to give
this is going to generate a good response.
You're going to have to give the posse some context on that before you answer, because I actually don't know this story.
Okay, so so we're after it's after the race. Junior just retired, or his, you know, he just got out of the car for the final time.
It's Homestead.
We're on pit road. There's this absolute mob scene around the car. I mean, so many reporters. I'm probably like four or five people deep. I can't even hear anything he's saying. I can hardly see Dale Jr. at this point. So I'm just kind of standing there in the middle of the mob. I'm not sure if he's going to keep talking long enough for me to get up there or not to hear anything. But I'm just kind of standing around and trying to document the scene. So, you know, the crowd dwindles down to like maybe about, I don't know, I was probably three people back, three people deep. I mean, I wasn't even close to being up front where Junior was, so I could hear what he's saying. So all of a sudden I see Junior kind of look through people in my direction, and he kind of makes eye contact and he kind of like gives a head nod. And I'm just like looking at, just staring back at him. I'm like, who's he nodding at? So he just kind of looks at me and he's like, Jeff Gluck. And he like reaches across everybody with his hand extended and like holds up his hand for a high five. And I'm like, so I just like high five him back. So I'm like, oh my God, this is like, you know, cause you're not supposed to be, you're not supposed to go like high five the interview subjects or, you know, hug an interview subject or something like along those lines. Or, you know, you're supposed to be as impartial as possible. So to be standing there with a group of media, you know, all around cameras and Dale Jr.'s, you know, sees you and high fives you, you know, on the one hand, you're just like, wow, that is insanely awesome. I can't believe that just happened. You know what I mean? Like, how have I gotten to this point in my life where Dale Jr. is getting out of his car and going for the high five? But at the same time, you're like, oh God, oh no, this is ethically not the right territory or not the right path to be on here. So I think he was a couple beers in maybe. I appreciate the acknowledgement. It was really nice of him to try to say that, oh, hey, I see you there. Kind of stuff, but at the same time, you're just kind of like, "Ooh, God, what are people going to think about this?"
Know what? I think every one of your bosses appreciates that, and in this new era of Patreonism and gonzo journalism, that's the place to be. I love that. So, second question from Brand James. It's going to need some more context. I think he asked like all these inside jokes. Now, are you why are you so scared of a bonfire?
Whatever that means. Oh my God, are you serious? He asked that? Wow. Okay, you know, this is, Brant doesn't realize, I mean, I'll out him on this. I mean, Brant has killed people. Yes. God. Yes. He's killed people. Here's what I mean. So, we were in Watkins Glen, and, so we're sitting at this brewery in Ithaca, and there was this little fire. It was a beautiful night outside. We're sitting there, and he goes, "Hey, these logs, they're like haunted by the spirits of the Adirondack woods or whatever." And I was like, "Okay." He's like, "Let's set them on fire and release the spirits." And I'm like, "Okay, we're like having beer." I'm like, "Yeah, that's fine." So he like. He like puts the logs in the fire at this fire pit at the brewery, and it's nice, you know. We're sitting around the fire, and he's like, "I'm releasing the spirits," and we're like, "Aha!" Yeah, we're drinking beer. So we get back to the hotel, and 20 minutes later, I get a call saying, "Hey, have you heard about this Tony Stewart thing?" I'm like, "Oh God!" So then we get to the track the next day, and I'm like, "Yo, not to be morbid or something, but I, you know, did you kill that guy with your weird spirit stuff? I mean, that was kind of odd. Let's never do that again."
Jesus.
So he's like, "Okay, yeah." So then, I think it's the next year. He sends me a picture of a bonfire. I guess it was a fire pit at his hotel. He's at Pocono, and he goes, "Yeah, hey, look where I am. Look what I'm doing." I'm like, "Dude, why are you doing that? Like, don't send me more pictures. Like, did you not learn your lesson?" He's like, "Ha ha ha." Next day, Justin Wilson gets killed at Pocono.
Oh my God.
Great. So I'm like, "Brant, like you need to cut out the fire stuff." Well, guess what? He sent me, I can't remember what else it was. He got somebody injured. Somebody got hurt or something like that at something. He was sending me a fire pit. He didn't kill that person. But he's continued to send me on my phone. He'll, you know, I'll be like, "Oh, text from Brant. What's this?" And it's a fire pit. I'm like, "Dude.
No, you can't. That ain't right. He's got to know by now."
I think he has not killed anybody this year, as far as I know. But something always bad seems to happen, at least, when Brant does the fire pit. So now the secret's out. He asked. So there's your
yeah, now it's on him. We'll bring it full circle back around to him. Hey, Brant, why are you still killing people? What's the story? That was great. So last question from Brant, and then we'll get on to Stranger Stang. We'll let you go, Jeff. he says, do you really like those disgusting green drinks that he drinks? Like, that's kind of begging the question a little bit, right? Disgusting green drinks, I guess. But does Jeff Gluck really like those disgusting green drinks?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, he's talking about like these like juice things that I'll bring sometimes to the track. Then it's like veggie-ish kind of juice. So. If you eat at the racetrack, you will probably die if you just eat all their food. So what happened was, this is a true story. Hopefully this is not TMI as far as my like medical information or something. But I have like high cholesterol runs in my family. So they put me on like cholesterol medicine a couple years ago. So I hadn't gone to the doctor for a year. And, this year I've been eating better. I've been working out more or something, and I'm doing pretty good. But the one thing that I changed was I stopped bringing groceries to the racetrack. And what I mean is, so they serve you free food in the media center at the racetrack, which is great. But every week it's hot dogs, burgers, pizza, fried chicken, barbecue. That's pretty much that rotation. So you're going to be eating one of those. And often, because these tracks are owned by the same people, it's like the same meat. Like you go to like an ISC track, like you'd be at Daytona, you'd be like, oh, there's that burger. And you go to IFC Fontana burger. And you're like, I swear that's the exact same. It's like, it's the same.
Threw it on a truck.
Yeah. So, I this year being on my own, being with my Patreons and all that stuff, I decided, I'm not going to spend the USA Today expense money and going to the grocery store and buying grapes or sandwiches or healthy stuff. I'll just eat it. I'll eat the food at the track. That's fine. I'll save my money. I need to save every dime I can to make it to as many races as possible. So I'll eat this track food. So fast forward to August, I moved to Portland. I've been here for a couple months. I go to the doctor, got to get some more cholesterol medicine or whatever. They take my blood and doctor calls me back. He goes, what did you say your cholesterol was before? I say what number, I think it was like, I had gotten it down to 180 or something. He's like, oh yeah, it's up to like 245.
Oh geez.
I'm like, what? He's like, what changes have you done this year? And I'm like, dude, literally I've gotten healthier. The only thing I've done is eat all this track food all the time. I eat all the pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, fried chicken, whatever. So he's like, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to double your dose. I'm like, but I'm 37 years old. I can't be like on crazy like heart cholesterol medicine already. He's like, nah, he's like, I'm gonna have to double your dose. So I'm like taking double the cholesterol medicine now. And so Brant wants to tease me about the green drinks. I'm like, man, I'm just staying alive.
Dance and all.
I like how it's, well, what changed? Well, nothing changed except all the crap that I'm eating.
Yeah, exactly.
Supersize me up in this mofo.
Yeah, right. All right, Sherwin, bring us the Stranger Stang.
We actually have two of them.
Oh boy. All right, this is going to be
one is going to be super super tame,
and the other one
is
not, I guess,
even
okay.
A little bit tame.
Ashley, all right.
Let me
talk to me, Sherwin.
I actually had to get it off my phone.
Oh, he's clicking around, doing the click. He's straight up text messaging with Ashley now. Hey,
oh yeah,
hey, all right.
It's happening.
You got the phone number, them digits. That
I got the digits.
Send me that screen name, baby.
Give me that G chip. All right.
Oh boy. Oh, he's giggling.
All right. This is the one I said I responded to her. I don't think we're gonna get Gluck to respond on this with any sort of resolution
specific,
because it would implicate you, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. So who is the one Twitter personality that you could block but can't? And I think what she means by that is, like, you don't like about half the crap they say, but you need half the crap they say for either your work or your personal interest. Yeah, and don't, and for sure don't call anybody out, but do you have one of those? Is that a thing for
something
you?
That comes to mind that you're like, yep.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll tell you. I mean, Jim Utter, right?
there you go.
No, I mean, it's, I, you know, Utter, I don't know how he does it. He always gets under my skin with, you know, the stuff he tweets. And you know, we're fine half the time. Like at the track, you know, we seem to get along, but he loves to troll or something. And so, yeah, he'll just go off and just say things that I just can't help myself from responding to at times. So, you know, I wish I could block him so that I wouldn't see that stuff and get myself mad. But for some reason, you know, he does have news, though. And there's, so there's, like, value in it. So you kind of got to see what he's saying. But, you know, I can't really do that because that would cause a big problem and he'd, you know, get mad, he'd be even more angry or, you know, tee off on me or stuff. So, you know, I really just need to do better. One of my friends in the media, I won't say who, when I tweet back at Utter, whenever, you know, he provokes me enough to, I can't help myself. I'm like, dang it, why'd I do that? He texts me and just says, do not engage. Do not engage. But I keep engaging. I cannot help it. So Ashley, that would be my answer.
Excellent. That's excellent. Awesome. It's like the reverse of trying to get Maverick to engage in Top Gun.
Mm. Yeah.
Get re-engaged. That's funny. Jim Utter has blocked me everywhere. mostly, I like to laugh. The reason why that he blocked me, I think from my – I can't remember if I did this from PETM or my personal, but I blocked him by – or he blocked me by saying – by not liking that I said that NASCAR Camping World Truck Series gets better ratings than the IndyCar Series, which was a statement of fact.
Oh,
that one, and I saw that one.
And he blocked me.
And I saw that one. And like, Sherwin said, Jim Utter blocked us. And I was like, dude, what did you say? And I went back, because, you know, Sherwin's handling the account. And I'm like,
I get a little bit sideways.
Yeah, yeah. And every once in a while, you're just like, dude, yeah, you can't say that. You know, people are going to take that wrong. And I went back and looked, and I'm like, all right, seriously. That dude needs to calm the. So I was in Sherwin camp on that one. So, all
right, if
so.
If you ever want to hear, you know, some of his perspective on that, I actually got him to do the social spotlight.
I thought it was you. Yeah. I thought it was you.
I listened to it twice.
Yeah, I listened to it, and I dude, it's not you. It was, but I was yelling at. I was kind of yelling at it.
Everybody that I, Jeff, everybody that I've spoken to, including Rusty and anybody that would listen or want to engage that conversation right around the time you did that podcast with him, was confident that he was an absolute liar in that conversation.
And I mean, that's probably hard for you to, I don't know, joke. Maybe you won't be on the next podcast.
So
that was a lot of the talk in my Facebook group too. In the Gluckers Facebook group on Patreon, they were like, "Oh, okay, we heard this," and all these people were like, "I've never said anything. I never said anything. I never said anything bad," and I got blocked. And they were just going through one by one. They're like, "That's not true." But he did say on the podcast that he's never blocked anybody without a reason, which maybe is not true based on the people that were saying that. But
that was like a cool like Twitter handle for a little while. Right after, I think it was your podcast or your interview that spurred was like
by Utter,
yeah, why I got blocked by Utter or whatever. It was a hashtag.
Oh, really?
For a little bit. Oh, it was great. It was great listening to people or reading those. So anyway, all
so
right, part
here's
two,
the
short
one that really oh, is boy. Like, can you keep it between the ditches on this?
Oh boy.
Here goes nothing. All right. We apologize on behalf of you know, the following question
the
does
following
not.
Question does
I don't
not
even know what it is.
Actually, it does represent everything that we are.
That we are, yeah.
And it's going to be really funny, and it's going to be awkward, and it's going to be very human.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with being human.
All right.
What was the most awkward activity you stopped in order to answer a text message? Like,
well, wait a minute.
Something with
does
your
it
phone?
Count if you're on the toilet?
Right.
Well, that's so, one of
them. Does that count as stopping it? I mean, if you stopped, like, wiping or something?
I think that counts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the
mid-wipe, and you're like,
that's
wait.
That's probably the most tame thing that I mean, thank you for introducing something, Tim, because I was thinking of other things.
You know, looking at my phone during other stuff. I mean, that would be pretty bad. No, I mean, I don't really. I mean, what are some of the things that you would nominate for reasons other than like taking a dump or something? Help me out here. What am I missing?
So, because I don't have any problem embarrassing myself in this space, I have a work phone and I have a work laptop. So those, you know, there are certain things you just don't look at with that,
right?
With those devices, right? And I have a personal phone, and sometimes you look at things that, you know, maybe you don't want to talk about, and then sometimes like your mom texts you while you're doing that, and like that can suck a little bit.
All right.
Okay. No, that hasn't. No. Yeah. No. You're on your own on that one.
See, I'm a worse human than you, and that's okay.
That's okay. Oh, I love
think
it.
That, I would just have to nominate, you know, I get a lot of work done in the bathroom. I mean, that's a lot of quiet time there that you don't usually get. So
one of the neat things about Skype is you can pick up your laptop with your headset on and you can actually go take a dump.
Well, that's
while you're in a conference call.
That's serious multitasking that I need to, you know, start working on there.
Well, like, it depends on how big of an emergency it is, right?
Well, dude, this has been like our longest episode
and our weirdest
in a long time and strangest closing. Thank you, Stranger Stay, Ashley Stang, for that one. And yeah, and so what can I say other than Jeff, close us out. Tell us what's going on, what you're up to, where we, I mean, everybody knows where they can find you. Any closing comments? And, you know, are you so pissed off you'd never be on the episode again?
No, I had fun. I'm sad it's over, except that I told Sarah that I'd probably be an hour and then we'd go to dinner.
Oh, boy.
Because it's 7:30 here on the Pacific Coast. And I told her to pick out a restaurant. And so she picked out a restaurant at like 6 p.m. She's like, I'm craving Mexican food. So she's had that thought of Mexican food in her head for an hour and a half.
Mm.
And now, so I'm worried that when I go out and open the door, what I'm going to be facing.
Oh,
so
you're going to be in the doghouse.
If I don't come back on the podcast, it may not be because I'm angry. It just may be because I Brant James lit a fire and it resulted in my death.
Well, send our condolences to Sarah for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tell her, te amo mi amor, and give her the, you know, the Mexican love song, La Cucaracha.
Okay.
We love you, Sarah.
All right.
Margaritas.
Thank you, Jeff, so much for being on. We've had an absolute blast.
Yeah,
I hope to do it again.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Sometime soon. And where, you know, what's your you're going to be at Daytona, Atlanta? What's the story next year?
I haven't really planned out too much yet. I mean, definitely Daytona. I'm going to the Chili Bowl in January. So that'll be good.
That is awesome.
On the list.
Got my reservations for that.
Mick Rose.
Yeah.
And, yeah, definitely Daytona. I mean, I'll definitely do the whole West Coast swing because that's easy.
Yeah.
Probably Atlanta. So
come see us.
I'll see you guys there in the beer belt.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yeah, buddy, the camo beer belts. You know how it is. All right, y'all. With that, we're going to close this out. Y'all know where to find him, at Jeff_Gluck of JeffGluck.com. And y'all know where to find us. We're going to bring this music up. It is the Pregame Engineer Tailgate Mayor Racing Podcast at PTM Podcast. You can find me, Tailgate Mayor, at Tailgate Mayor.
And you can find me, Pregame Engineer, at Pregame Engineer.
And we're going to talk to y'all. Hey, we're doing our thing. Actually, Sherwin, I need to talk about next week.
Uh-oh.
There might be an issue with next week.
Oh, no.
I don't know. We'll figure something out. Something's going to happen.
We'll figure it out.
It's going to be crazy. Appreciate y'all being here.
Head banging over there.
Oh, yeah, he's getting after it. Appreciate y'all being on, as always. Thank you for listening. Y'all have a good Christmas. Y'all have a good Christmas buying season of Christmas.
Surely we'll have an episode for him before Christmas.
Yeah, get your mom and them.
But you got to buy stuff now so you don't stress your ass out.
You got to do it now. Get some gift cards. Get your thing going. Sydney, take us out.
Buy one of those sweaters that's terrible. Or one from, like, what is it, the Christmas Vacation. Cheddar was full.
I love that one. Talk to y'all next week. Woo! It's down in the grill.